Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hello and welcome to Strong Tower Radio's Good Growing with the Garden Guy, affectionately named as the Garden Guy, with Gary Heilig, my sister Sue Majeure, and yours truly, Tom Majeure. Well, Gary, it's October already.
Yes, it is.
Well, why don't we have a word of prayer? And Sue, would you lead us?
Of course. Heavenly Father, thank you as we are moving into fall that you've blessed us throughout the growing year so far. And we look forward to the glorious colors that you're going to paint the leaves as and the things that we still will enjoy for harvest and thinking about plans and possibilities for the new year. So bless us in all of the things as we still learn more from the things that you help us to grow. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Well, Gary, before we get started on the quiz, kind of give us a harvest update. What does it look from your point of view? Of course, you're down from the Eaton Rapids area. Mm-hmm. Sue's in the Kalamazoo area. And I'm up here in the Cadillac area. We had a little bit of frost right after Labor Day. It took out some things, but not a lot, and it wasn't sustained.
Yeah, we're fine in mid-Michigan, but there's a lot of dust in the air because they're harvesting the soybeans.
Okay.
And we haven't had very much rain, and which is nice for the soybeans, but it's just like you see the harvesters, just a cloud of dust going across the fields. And, of course, people are harvesting just about everything in the garden. We're starting to finish up, just harvested some potatoes this last week, and there's still raspberries that people can pick, and we're going into, well, we're well into picking now, because picking actually starts on apples in August, and they continue through late October, sometimes even November, depending on what you have and what the weather's like. So there's a lot of stuff coming out right now.
Absolutely. We harvested quite a bit of tomatoes already, and
pumpkins are on sale now.
And yeah. And green beans are pretty well done.
Mm-hmm.
And we harvested those.
So. A lot of winter squash is coming out now. And of course, we're in October, so in about another week, you'll start planting your garlic. We talked about that last month. So get your hardneck garlic ready to go.
I'm going to ask you some questions on garlic. I'm glad you brought that up.
So you forgot already?
Well.
We talked about that last week, or last month.
But anyway, we did harvest the garlic, and we need to replant some for our next crop. Yeah. And it's just some of the techniques that we need to do.
And the reason why you want to plant it in October is because you get root growth, and you'll end up with a larger bulb the next year. So, but let's get to the quiz, then we can talk about the other stuff.
Okay, let's go.
Our quiz this week is on beans.
Beans.
And I'm going to keep score between you and Sue.
Uh-oh.
And whoever wins gets a bag of bean seeds.
Bean seeds, okay.
I have to ask you what you want.
Okay, very
All right,
good.
Question number one. Which ancient civilization first domesticated common beans? Was it the Romans? Was it the ancient Egyptians? Was it the original indigenous people in America, or the Chinese?
Ooh, those are all very good. I bet it's either China or Sumeria, one of those kind of guys.
Okay, pick one.
Oh, man. I almost want to say Egypt. But China always seems to have everything. I'm going to go with China.
I'm going to go with Egypt.
And both of you are wrong. It's the indigenous people of the Americas.
Oh, great.
Oh, okay. That you hurt. Say,
I was thinking of the Aztecs. Are those indigenous people of...
Yeah, they are.
Oh, I should have gone with that.
The second one is a little easier. Beans, corn, and squash are traditionally known by many Native American tribes as A, the three miracles, B, the three sisters, C, the three mothers, or sacred seeds.
We know it's B.
Oh, the three sisters.
All right. Both of you get a score on that one. Number three, which country is currently the largest producer of dry beans in the world? Is it India, the United States, Brazil, or Myanmar?
I'm going to say the United States.
Sue?
We have more air, maybe have more arable land, but they eat an awful lot of dal and chana and that kind of thing. So I'm going to say India.
The answer is Myanmar, which was a surprise for me.
Yeah,
I didn't know that they ate that many beans over there. Okay, the word bean originally referred to which plant before spreading to others like coffee beans and cocoa beans? Is it A, lentils, B, chickpeas, C, broad beans or fava beans, or D, soybeans?
Okay, say the question one more time.
The word bean originally referred to which plant before spreading to others like coffee beans and cocoa beans? Is it lentils, chickpeas, broad beans, or soybeans?
I think it's probably fava beans.
Okay, that's the broad beans.
I just feel comfortable with that.
Same answer?
Yes.
You're both right.
Oh, good.
We're tied up.
We're still tied.
Yeah, still tied up. Which type of bean is the primary ingredient in traditional Japanese miso or tofu? Is it black beans, pinto beans, fava beans, or soybeans?
Soybeans.
Soybeans.
That is correct. You guys are neck and neck. Now, this one's going to separate the ladies from the men.
Okay, brothers from sisters. Okay.
Which country consumes the most beans per person? Is it Mexico, Rwanda, India, or Italy?
Ooh, I think it would be India or Mexico.
Tom?
Well, she hasn't given her answer yet.
All right.
I don't know. That's kind of tough. They eat a lot of beans in Mexico, but India has such a huge population.
But it's per person.
They, like I said, there's all that chana dal and chapatis and all those things. So I'm going to say India.
I'll try to break the tie with Mexico.
You're both wrong. Rwanda.
Oh, man. Who would guess Rwanda?
I wouldn't. That one surprised me too. What important role do beans play in sustainable agriculture? A, they repel pests. B, they fix nitrogen in the soil through symbiosis with bacteria. C, they need no irrigation. Or D, they grow year-round without fertilizer.
B.
They fix nitrogen.
Fix nitrogen.
That's correct. You guys are still neck and neck.
Yes.
We planned this out ahead, didn't we, Tom?
Oh, of course. Of course.
We still have enough to separate you guys. Okay, next one. Coffee beans are not actually beans. What are they? A, nuts. B, grain. C, seeds from a fruit. D, pods.
They're a berry.
That would be number C, seeds from a fruit. What do you think, Tom?
I'd say it's seeds from a fruit.
That is correct. It's called the coffee cherry.
Oh.
And you're still tied up at 5. All right. How many true bean species, and that would be like Great Northerns, pinto beans, that type of thing. We're not including things like chickpeas and some lentils and things of that sort. So how many true bean species are cultivated in the world today? Is it 25, 50, 100, or 2,000?
2,000.
I'm kind of feeling warm towards 2000 also.
You both are leaning toward the wrong. It's only 20.
Oh, no.
It's only 25 species, but there are thousands of varieties.
That's very interesting.
That tricked me. Because I was thinking about how many kinds of beans that you hear about.
Yeah. Oh. All right. I should have maybe told you, remember, we're talking species. Okay, number 10. In ancient Greece and Rome, beans were sometimes used for what unusual purpose? A, making jewelry. B, casting votes in elections. C, paying taxes. D, writing messages.
You know, I want to say maybe like paying taxes or something, but the way it's going, it's probably jewelry.
That's interesting. But I'm going to take the monetary round and paying taxes. I'm going to go with that.
Once again, you're both wrong. It's casting votes in elections. All right.
Casting vote ballots with beans.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You ever heard the term
bean ballot?
You ever heard the term bean counters?
Yeah. But it would seem like you could stuff the ballot somehow that
you
way.
You certainly could. There's always a way to stuff a ballot box, no matter what you're doing, what you're using. Number 11, which type of bean is associated with traditional British baked beans? Is it black beans, pinto beans, navy beans, kidney beans, Great Northerns, or cranberry?
Navy beans, I bet.
Tom? Let me read the choices again.
Yeah, one more time, please.
Black beans,
yep.
Pinto beans, navy beans, kidney beans, Great Northerns, or cranberries. What the British use for making their traditional British baked beans.
I'm going to say kidney beans.
Nope, it's navy. And
navy.
Sue is one ahead now. See if you can hold on to this lead, Sue. All right, the next one is... The fabled Boston baked beans are sweetened with what ingredient? A, sugar cane. B, brown sugar. C, molasses. D, maple syrup.
Molasses.
I'm going to say molasses also.
And you would be correct. Number 13. Tom, you only have three more chances.
Oh, boy.
Tie it or win. So you've got to get 2 out of 3. Which... the butter bean is another name for which type of bean? A, pinto. B, navy. C, lima. D, garbanzo.
Lima.
Lima.
Yes, that's correct. And Sue is holding her lead. Number 14. You have two more chances, Tom. You've got to get both of these to win.
Oh, my. Sounds
one
like,
to tie.
Sounds like the playoffs to me.
Yeah, you're in the playoffs now, buddy. Which continent has the highest diversity of native bean species? A, Asia. B, Africa. C, the Americas. D, Europe.
Ooh.
I'm thinking it's either Africa or the Americas. But with your earlier answer, the Native America, let's go with the Americas.
What's your answer, Sue?
This is a toughie because I'm thinking about Myanmar and China and all those sorts.
I need ChatGPT for this one.
Let's see. Of course, there were the indigenous peoples. They had the three sisters with all their beans, but that mean they had more varieties.
Asia, Africa, Americas, Europe.
I bet it turns out to be Africa, but I'm going to say Asia.
And Tom has tied it up.
Oh, whoa.
All right, guys.
Oh, smoked.
If one of you gets this one, you win. Here is the last one. In many cultures, beans are eaten on New Year's Day, such as black-eyed peas in the U.S. South, to symbolize what? A, good health. B, prosperity and good luck. C, long life. D, fertility.
Good luck.
Okay. Prosperity.
So you're saying prosperity and good luck, which is B. You want your answers again, Tom?
Prosperity is mine.
You go with that too? And they are both correct, and it's a tie.
Oh.
Yay! See, I knew it had to be good luck because of Hoppin' John.
And because
I'm the
judge.
That's a traditional Southern New Year's Eve dish for good luck is Hoppin' John.
You both will get a package of bean seeds.
All right.
What kind of bean seeds do we get?
Well, you have to tell me what you want. It's your choice.
But you know what? They're all going to be grown in my garden, so.
That's right. I was going
to
say that.
Well, you can still give them to me. I'll give you to the end of the program to figure out what you want.
But she gets the choice of what she
wants. If you know a specific cultivar of beans that you like or any of those things, it could be, you know, limas, it can be garbanzos, although not very many people grow garbanzos in Michigan, but it can be done. And then we'll see how it goes.
Well, maybe it'll give us some instructions on how about growing these beans.
Beans are so easy to grow.
Okay, good. Well, I need to start growing them. Well, good. Well, that's the first segment of Good Growing with the Garden Guy. We'll be back. We'll be talking about a number of subjects, including harvest. Stay tuned.
Hi, folks. Jelaine Fenner here. I just want to thank you for listening to Strong Tower Radio. We value all your prayers and financial support, especially our monthly donors. To stay on the air and continue to proclaim the Three Angels' messages, we need more monthly donors. Any amount is greatly appreciated, $5, $10, $25, $50, and of course, we'd even appreciate a larger donation. You know Jesus is coming back soon. Many people are learning about his return. Please pray and ask God what kind of commitment you can do for Strong Tower Radio. And if you are already a monthly donor, won't you consider increasing your donation? You can call us at 231-468-2087 or mail a donation to P.O. Box 567, Cadillac, Michigan 49601, or go online to str.fm and click that donate button. Thank you for your support of Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back with Good Growing with the Garden Guy, a Strong Tower Radio feature held each month and usually the second week of the month. We're going to be talking about plants and gold prospecting. What is the commonality, Gary?
Well, first of all, my wife and I are amateur gold prospectors, and we've prospected in Georgia, North Dakota, California, Wyoming. We've been all over the place. And we have all the equipment. We have our own dredge. We have what's called a gold bug, which is a metal detector, sluice boxes, all kinds of equipment. And I just happened to stumble upon this once, that certain plants are able to pick up metals from the soil.
Okay.
And there are plants that will pick up gold. Now, you won't get rich doing that because there is trace amounts, because plants pick up things in an ion form, which means it's an ion is a couple of atoms together. So we're talking about very, very small amounts. But they can be an indication that gold is in the area. And so I thought it was interesting to let you know that what type of plants will indicate that gold may be nearby. And one is the mustard family. And a lot of people grow Indian mustards in their garden. And Indian mustard will accumulate small amounts, what we call trace amounts of gold. And, of course, the way to find out if there's gold nearby is you'd have to dry the leaves down. There's different parts of the plants that you would get. You dry them down, and then they do an assay to see what percentage of GOLA is there. But I never thought about something common that we eat, mustard greens, can indicate whether gold is in the area.
Wow.
Another one is eucalyptus. Now, eucalyptus doesn't grow in the northern areas, but you'll find it in places like California. And it was introduced into the California foothills. And the leaves can absorb and store trace amounts of gold also. And if you were trying to find out if eucalyptus plants had gold in them, you would go to the older leaves near the tip of the plant. Those were the ones that you would collect. And also common sunflower.
Okay.
Will pick up gold. It will pick up a number of different metals, but it will pick up gold in low concentrations. Acacia is also a plant that you see out in the arid and rocky soils of the western United States. And they will grow in gold-rich soils. And so if you were coming across an area and there was a lot of acacia species nearby, then you would want to do a little looking around at some of the other indicators of where you might find some gold. Also, pennycress, and it'll be found in disturbed soils and what they call mine tailings, where in the old days where prospectors were working, in those days, they didn't get all the gold out. The equipment that we have now is much better. So if you found an old pile and it was a lot of pennycress on it, that'd be a place I might want to do a little prospecting. It's called a hyperaccumulator of gold. And you would check the young stems and the young leaves in order to find it. So that by itself won't necessarily tell you, because you can look at certain rocks, for instance, to tell whether there's gold there. If there's water, there's certain
that
places that you look.
With
yeah, that'll be associated with it. But that's one of the things that can be used to kind of narrow down a possible area to do some prospecting.
What's the fascination about gold if you're not going to get rich?
Well, not from that, but an ounce of gold is going for about $3,700 right now. I melted a lot of gold down that I had, and I have found a lot, but the bar is about this big, and it's a half an ounce, and you know, it's about not quite twice the size of my thumbnail, and that thing is worth about $1,500. That's crazy. So
amazing.
Now naturally, that depends on whether the gold is 24 karat, because all gold has some imperfections in it. Many times it'll be associated with
impurities.
Other metals. Yeah, and it would have to be purified down to 99.999 in order for it to be 24 karat gold, and that's where you're going to get the highest price.
Very good. How much effort do you put forth to get the $1,500?
Well, it is a hobby. You don't think about it as being a job unless you're at a much bigger scale and you're in a place like Alaska, the Bering Sea, or someplace like that. But there's still lots of gold out there. Tasmania is a great place to go too.
All right.
It has some big gold.
Well, you talked about molybdenum.
Molybdenum.
That's a mineral, is it not?
Yes, it is. The reason I put that in there, over the number of months that we've been doing this, we've talked about various plant nutrients. And if you remember, there's about, I think it's about 17, I have to go back and look, 16 or 17 essential nutrients. Even though a plant will pick up gold, it's not essential. It doesn't really play any role in the metabolism of the plant. So that's why they say it's not essential. But molybdenum is one of the essential nutrients that plants need. And you probably remember when we talked about legumes,
mm-hmm.
that they fix nitrogen.
That's right.
Through an association with bacteria. And maybe next month we'll talk about this more in detail, how it's actually done. It's quite fascinating if you're a science freak or a science nerd like I am. But anyway, molybdenum is necessary to help the bacteria fix the nitrogen. And we won't go into all the details of it, but it's also essential for protein synthesis. In other words, for the plant to be able to make various proteins that it needs. And we use those proteins when we eat the plants. And also, it's necessary for plant growth. Now, in terms of it being deficient in your soil, Michigan is one of those nice places where we don't have the level of deficiencies that, say, other areas of the country might have. But you normally don't see a deficiency of molybdenum unless you're on a very light textured soil.
Is that sand?
Like a sandy soil, or you have a pH less than 5.5. So if you were trying to grow, say, blueberries on a sandy soil, you're probably going to have a pH below 5.5. And you could develop a deficiency. And what happens is the older leaves on the plant start to turn yellow. And it tends to be more between the veins. And then, of course, the veins remain more green. When you have a severe deficiency, it tends to stunt the plants. They don't grow very well. And if you have legumes, the nodules where the process of nitrogen fixing takes place.
That's down in the roots.
Right, down in the roots. They're like little bumps on the roots. That's not very efficient. Those nodules tend to be much smaller when you're deficient in molybdenum in the soil. And it can affect your yield. So that's why we not only do a regular soil test, but if you're growing plants that are sensitive to deficiencies in molybdenum, then you might run an additional test. Because zinc, boron, molybdenum, those are all tests that can be run. Now, the way that a person would build up molybdenum in the soil would be through compost, because you're recycling the molybdenum that plants have picked up. And since it is a element, it's not going to break, it's not going to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. It'll always be there. You might take some out of the soil as you harvest a crop and consume it, but assuming that you're not taking off most of it, because you think about a squash plant, a lot of the material is still left there because you have the leaves and the stems and the roots that aren't used. You're taking maybe your acorn squash or spaghetti squash off. You're not going to be taking a lot of molybdenum out of the soil. But also, what you can do is add animal manure, because they use molybdenum, but they don't use all of it that they consume. The body only takes what it needs, and then it excretes the rest of it. Decayed plant material, so when your material is breaking down, that's where the compost comes in. And there are molybdenum-rich materials like finely ground limestone. Now, limestone is used to raise the pH of your soil. So if you don't need limestone, you don't want to put it on. There is something called molybdenite that you can buy, but rarely do homeowners use it. It might be used in a commercial setting. But also, when you're growing legumes, they can recycle that molybdenum. It'll take it out of the soil, and then when it breaks down, it just recycles it back into the soil. When you have a low pH, like, say, down in the blueberry range, even though you're not growing blueberries, by raising the pH by using lime, then you can make the molybdenum more available. Mm. Because there's a chart that you can look up that shows you the availability of each nutrient based on the pH. So, for instance, iron is more available at the lower pHs, whereas molybdenum is more available at higher pHs. So if your pH is not in the range where the plant can take advantage of what's there in the soil, then you make a change, in this case, driving your pH up. So all of those things can help to keep the soil in good shape. Now, if you're using a liquid fertilizer, like Miracle-Gro as part of your fertilization program, mm-hmm. you're adding molybdenum back to the soil because it has not only the NPK, but all of the trace nutrients too. So it'll have boron and manganese and magnesium and a number of other things.
So Miracle-Gro, they specialize. That's one of the things they do to make their product.
And a number of other liquid fertilizers will also have various what we call secondary and micronutrients, which basically secondary nutrients are required at lower levels than the primary nutrients, which are the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And then micronutrients simply means that they're required in very small amounts. And to give you an example, if I was going to use urea on a, and this is just an example, urea on a soil, I might use 80 pounds per acre for a particular crop. But with molybdenum or zinc or some of these others, you may only use like 1 or 2 pounds per acre. And an acre is 43,560 square feet. So you're using very small amounts, and that's why they call them micronutrients. They just aren't needed in large amounts.
Very good.
Now, our next topic is going to stay on soil.
Okay. What would, and this is continuing our topic of the new earth, when God makes it over, makes it, returns to the perfect state it was before sin came into this world. How does that affect the soil? What is the soil going to be like? They had a really good gardens.
Well, what we're actually talking about, last time we talked about what gardening will be like in the new earth.
Mm-hmm.
What we're looking at now is we're starting at the beginning of the new earth, and when sin was introduced, what happened? And so we know from Genesis 3:17 through 19, right after everything was created, God said everything was good, right?
Right.
So in Genesis 3:17 through 19, after Adam and Eve sinned, there are a couple of things that happened. It said, cursed is the ground for your sake. So normally we don't think of a curse as being something good. But God was saying, I'm cursing the ground for your sake. Now, it gives you an idea what he meant by that in the next line when it says, in toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. In other words, you're going to have to work for it. Now, if you've ever read the book Patriarchs and Prophets, there's a part in there about Sodom and Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about how lush everything was and how nice it was to live there. And Lot wanted to go toward that area because it looked like good land.
Right.
And one of the problems that we have as humans is when we have it too good and we have a lot of leisure time, then we tend to get into trouble. That's just the way it is. What did they say? Idle hands are the devil's workshop?
Correct.
It's very true. And so the reason when it said God cursed it, the soil, he changed it in some way so that it would not yield its fullness. Now, we don't know what that means in terms of how he did it, but there are some conclusions that you can draw in the sense that, for instance, we know that at certain pHs, certain nutrients are available and others are not available. Well, it's a pretty good guess that the soil was such in the beginning that whatever the pH was or whatever the soil conditions were, all the nutrients were available for plants to take them out. Because if they're not, then the plants have problems. And the reason God did that when it says for your sake and it says that you're going to have to work, that meant that he's going to be really putting in effort to get what God had intended to be much easier originally. And the quality of the soil determined how a plant grows. So God changed something. Other things that can make a difference in terms of how healthy a soil is the microbes that are in that soil. Because there are beneficial bacteria and fungi that do all kinds of things that when you really get into the inner workings of soil chemistry, it's absolutely amazing. And so I would expect that changed also. But another thing about the toil part, do you remember what I said was the number one thing that people had to do in order to carry on agriculture? What spent the most time? What they spent the most time doing?
I've forgot, but I would assume it's tilling up the soil.
No, that's a short period of time. What do you do all the time?
Weeding.
There you go.
Okay.
Weeding.
Yeah. Most of your time, unless you're mulching, you're spending keeping the weeds out, because every time it rains, you get a new flush of weeds growing. And notice what it said in the Bible about what was going to happen. There was going to be thorns and thistles would appear. Well, how do you think they got there?
I assume they were good plants that went awry.
Things just don't happen.
Okay.
And the reason I say this, now I don't have evidence of this, but I just was thinking about it, and I'm throwing this idea out to see what you think about it. When you think about the story of Job,
mm-hmm.
by the description of what happened, Satan had the ability to manipulate the weather. Am I correct?
Correct.
Because he caused a storm to come up. He had the ability to cause people to come in war against Job.
Mm-hmm.
He stirred up the people. He also had the ability to strike him with sickness. So those are three examples that Satan had great powers. So why wouldn't he change things in terms of plants so that we would have thorns and thistles? I don't think God did that, because
it's against his character.
Yeah, it's against his character, because when you think of what thorns and thistles are, you think of roses. They probably did not have thorns on them originally. And you think about thistles. Try running around in a lawn, and then you hit a thistle plant that's just beginning to come up. I mean, it just causes you all kinds of pain. That's not God's work. So it's probably Satan doing that. But it also, we had other things happening, like plants became poisonous. There were no carnivorous plants in the Garden of Eden, because in order for that to be,
there has to be decay.
There has to not only be decay, but there had to be death.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow that was changed. And so we see that things were really changed, so that Adam had to really work. And one of the things he had to do was pull weeds and thorns and thistles and everything else that popped up. But going beyond that, our soils were destroyed also by the flood. And we can talk about that after our break.
Okay. You're listening to Good Growing with the Garden Guy. He is Gary Heilig and Sue Majeure and Tom Majeure. We'll be back after this break.
The Bible and God's character are under attack like never before. Here at Strong Tower Radio, we are proud to hold up the Bible as a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. We believe the Bible is the Word of God and contains the good news of God's character and His great plan of salvation for mankind. If you know and believe this to be true, won't you help Strong Tower Radio proclaim the truth about our God and His Word, the Bible? To do that, go to www.strongtowerradio.org, and there, on our secure website, you will find a donate button. Click on that and give as the Lord directs. Thank you for listening and supporting Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back with Good Growing with the Garden Guy, Gary Heilig, Sue Majeure, and Tom Majeure. Gary, as we left off, we were talking about the effects of sin on this world, and you were just touching on the flood, and we had to go to a break. Tell us, we all, you know, geologically, it's obvious that the soil was completely turned up. There's been a lot of traumatic, cataclysmic upheaval and changes of soil. It's not, I assume, in the originally in the Garden of Eden, everything was probably very uniform, very nutritious. Everything was balanced, as you said. Things changed.
Yeah, and you alluded to the in the sense that the whole soil biome was disrupted. We know that the mountains are a result of that disruption. And one of the things you think about is what is different about the water in the ocean?
It has salt content.
It has salt content. How do plants respond to salt water?
Most of them are damaged by it.
Damaged or killed. And I did a little research. First of all, I wanted to find out, do plants need sodium? They're not one of the essential, it's not one of the essential nutrients. And there are a few plants, mostly grasses, that can tolerate them and use sodium a little bit. But the vast majority of plants do not like sodium in the soil. One resistant garden plant that is able to handle salt around it is asparagus. And people will use salt to try to keep weeds down, but eventually you'll make that soil useless for anything else. So the flood covered the entire planet, right?
Right.
And so one of the things I decided to do, I did a little research and I said, can sodium be found in the soil worldwide? The answer to that is yes. And so that is probably one of the things that affects how well plants grow, because we know that the higher the sodium content in the soil, the poorer your plants will grow. So that was disrupted. Also, there are all kinds of microbes and interactions in the soil between the organic matter, between the bacteria, between the fungi and all those sorts of things. We have both microorganisms and macroorganisms. And that was all disrupted too. So I can imagine all that salt water probably killed off a lot of the bacteria. And after the flood, all of these things had to recover. Mm-hmm. And it probably takes time. So then I thought, well, if you had all this water, wouldn't the salt content be quite high in the soil? Most likely it was. Then I said, well, how would you get rid of it? How would you get rid of all that sodium?
I don't know.
Well, the question I asked was the sodium leach. Leaching means moves down through the soil profile.
Sure.
And it does. So over time, as we continue to have rain and water movement through the soil, the sodium was probably pushed down deep. And one thing that would support that idea is if you dig a well and you go deep enough, guess what you hit?
Salt water.
Salt water. So those were just some of my little thoughts on the situation. But our soil was really messed up, and it probably is nothing. I'm sure it wasn't, because the Bible says it wasn't. Nothing like what it was originally. And I always like to tell people, gardening on the new earth is going to be much easier and much more fun.
That's right. It'll be more training, as you've said before.
Yeah.
Well, it's fall time and fall lawn care. Tell us what we need to think about.
Well, there are a lot of things in fall that people might be thinking about. One is it's a perfect time to deal with weeds. And if you have Creeping Charlie, which is that little low weed, has a little purple flower, the leaves are kind of scalloped around the end. And
I kind of like Creeping Charlie.
Well, if you like a lawn, you're not going to like it. Now, I will tolerate a certain amount of it, because I also realize that a lawn of just beautiful Kentucky bluegrass mixture or blend is kind of sterile for a lot of animals. And, for instance, I've talked about in the spring when the dandelions come up, the honeybees, those one of the first places they go in order to get the pollen, which is their protein source. Excuse me. But I was studying my Bible the other day, and I like to sit in my car because it's nice and quiet there. And all of a sudden, grackles and other little birds landed in the grass right next to the car. I like to call my grass a diverse community of plants.
Okay.
And they're poking around. I said, what are they doing? And they actually were getting seeds from various weeds that were in the soil. Now, had that been all Kentucky bluegrass blend or something, there'd have been nothing there for them to eat. And there had to be...
Yeah, the finches are fond of, like, the mouse-eared chickweed and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And so they were just having a good time. And I just sat there, being very quiet. They didn't want to disturb them. There was probably 50 birds right next to the car and in the yard, just feeding on all those things. But for those who do not want those weeds, on a sunny day in October, while it's still nice and warm, it's great to get rid of this particular problem.
How do you do that?
Well, there's only one way to do it. You have to use chemicals. So if you're an organic grower, that's not going to work. But there are materials like Trimec, which is actually a mixture of three different things. And there's another material, I think it's triclopyr, but I'm not positive. I have to go back and look, that will do a good job on that one. There's another one called Tenacity that works really well on weed seeds. And you have to read the directions. One of the things they'll tell you is don't cut the lawn for about 3 days afterwards or 3 days before. And you spray this on according to label directions. And that's it. Now, that'll kill the broadleaf weeds, but then you have these spaces. And it's really too late to do much seeding because you're going to be in October, and we normally want to finish our seeding by mid-September. You can come back in November when it gets cooler and do what's called a dormant seeding, and then the grass will come up as soon as the weather's good. Now, the other way that you can get grass to spread would be to use some fertilizer. But if you're going to use fertilizer, I would use something with slow release nitrogen. And I'd run a soil test. If there's any need for phosphorus is good for root growth. Lawns don't need much phosphorus, but that if you're trying to get a new seed started, then it's okay to use phosphorus on your soil. And also raise the mowing height to like 3 inches or more, depending on how high your mower will go. And the more tissue you have on the top, the more chance you have for growth. Because in the cooler part of the season, that's when your lawn's going to grow the most, especially if you're getting the fall rains. Another thing you want to do is if you have had grub problems in the past, you might check and see if there are grubs in the soil. If you wanted to try to treat in October, they're going to be a little less active as it gets cooler, but the soil doesn't cool off as fast as the air does. If you do, you're going to have to use a product called Dilox, because Dilox or 7-granular, not just 7-dust, but 7-granular, and that will help to knock down the grubs because they will feed on grass seed if you put grass seed there. And then, of course, you want to be sure that, especially if you put seed down, I probably wouldn't do a lot of watering except just for the grass itself. For the seed, you're not going to put that down in November anyway because you don't want to put it down now. And as far as the leaves fall, what I like to do is I always cut the leaves. So I'll start in the middle of the yard and cut outward and just keep pushing leaves and grinding them in.
So you're cutting them multiple times.
Multiple times until the pieces are so small they just go right into the lawn. And sometimes if you have a lot of trees, it'll get pretty deep and you'll have to do some raking. But you can mow most of the leaves into the lawn, and that's fine. It's good for the trees, too, because that's where they get most of their nutrients if you're not fertilizing, is recycling the nutrients from the leaves that drop to the ground. So those are all things that you should be doing this time of year if you have a lawn.
I have to admit, I mean, I know the grubs can make your lawn bald and so on. I wouldn't care for them, but I think I'd pick the Creeping Charlie and the mouse-eared chickweed and so on and have the birdies instead of the billiard table lawn.
Yeah. And that's a personal choice. My area, this lawn is just too big to have that kind of a lawn. And it costs a lot of money, too, because you have to fertilize. It has to be watered during dry parts. And I just don't want to do that. But I have orange and yellow hawkweed in there. There's a little magenta flower that I haven't identified it yet, but it's there. And then, of course, you have some dandelions, and then I have some creeping Charlie and pineapple weed and various other things. There's probably about 16 different species all producing flowers that are kind of nice. Violets, yeah, I have everything. And at the time,
have you planted the pink dandelions you talked about?
I haven't, but you know what? I've been reluctant to do that because most people don't like dandelions, and dandelions won't stay on your property. And I can imagine some neighbor being really upset with these pink dandelions, and they'd trace it right back to my yard. So, no, I haven't done that, Sue.
What about fall plantings of trees and shrubs?
Well, I put that on there because this is the time of the year where you can get 50% off.
I like that.
On trees and shrubs. And, of course, you're not going to have the same selection that you would in the spring, but there's some serious bargains out there.
What is your price point for trees? 50% or is
there? I have no price point. If I want it, I'm going to buy it.
Okay.
So that's just the way I am, Tom. I'm going to be 72 this year. And I don't have a lot of time left, so if I want a tree, I'm going to buy it.
All right. You're not going to wait till next year.
No, because I told my wife she wanted a tulip tree, and I said, Jess, you know how long it takes for those things to flower? She said, I'll buy the biggest one I can get. And I think the diameter on the trunk was probably 2 inches. She's still going to wait for a while.
Okay.
And there's a good possibility we'll never see it bloom, but she wanted it anyway, so... Your perspective on life changes as you get older. When you're in your 20s and 30s, you can put whatever you want in. You said, I'm going to see that bad boy get to be mature. But when you get to be 72, no, you're not. the important thing is get them in as soon as possible because the roots will start to grow. And also, when you plant, it's better to make a hole about twice as big as the root ball. If the root ball is growing around in the pot, you may need to slice some roots and spread them out. And
when you slice it, you do it kind of...
I just take in a box cutter and then just slice down the sides. You just want to get some of those finer roots to grow outward.
Okay.
And if you have really big roots that are growing around in circles, there's not much you can do about that. And they eventually may cause problems for the trees. It's called girdling. But if they're small enough, you want to cut them so you can pull them out and stretch them so that they won't be a problem later on. And it's important that you make sure that they have sufficient water in the fall because so far this year we've had a very dry late summer going into the fall. We haven't had a lot of rain. So new trees need to be watered. They don't need to be fertilized. If you want to... put some compost around the roots as before you plant, that's fine. That's not going to hurt anything because the nutrient levels are so low there that it's not going to cause a flush of growth or anything. Then, of course, you need to think about protecting those plants. As soon as it gets cold, you're going to need to put plastic wraps around them to keep the rabbits off. If you're in an area where there are deer, most likely they will browse. Bucks will rub the trunk, so you'll have to put some kind of a protection up because the bucks will rub it as long as the bark is smooth. Mm-hmm. Once it becomes very mature bark, they don't bother it as much. But if you don't protect them, a buck rub, depending on how much they work on that bark, can destroy a brand new tree.
Wow.
And that's not covered by the guarantee.
Planning for next year.
This is the time of year also that you want to evaluate how things went. It may be like Jess bought some green beans the other day from a farmer's market, and she said, I'm not buying anything but Blue Lake, and there's a couple of others that we like. And she just, the green bean, I tasted it, had a wonderful flavor, but it was kind of tough. And like Blue Lake is much softer, And if you prefer that, well then, you know, buy, start thinking about that and write down what you liked out of your garden. Usually I'll try different tomatoes every year and I'll make notes. I think I mentioned this once before. Once I tried mortgage lifter, which this guy supposedly paid off his mortgage by selling these things. I was not impressed at all. And just made some salsa yesterday from a mixture of our tomatoes and it turned out really good. So you need to review what you grew and say if you were processing something, how did it work? For instance,
it's still fresh in your memory.
Yeah, because you're not going to remember later on, especially when you get up to my age. You might not even remember you had a garden last year. But start thinking about ordering seeds as soon as possible, getting supplies that you might need. For instance, I saw at Menards this brick that was kind of shaped like a cross. And what it was is you put the brick down, you put your wood for a raised bed in the little slats on the brick, and then they just connect together at each end. And then there's a hole in the middle of the brick where you can put rebar down there to stabilize it. You can stack a brick on top of that and then make another level. And so that's one of the things I want to try next year to see how that works out. So start writing down your ideas. And if you have ideas that for your garden that might be something you can put on your Christmas wish list or whatever the case may be.
Slip this one.
Do you journal, Gary? Do you do a journal so you can keep track of what grew well this year and what you're not going to try again and so on and so forth?
I have a big box of seeds, and I keep all of the packages of the ones that I like until I get new ones. So, no, I don't journal. I don't do a journal. I will sometimes put some stuff in my computer files to remember something, but as a journal, no.
So there's probably an app for that, as they say.
There might be.
Well, let's, we've had a good discussion about the October growing. Of course, there's always November, so stay tuned. We'll be back next month with Good Growing with the Garden Guy, Gary Heilig, Tom Majeure, and Sue Majeure. Until next month, good growing. Bye now.